70% of conflict has no solution. There's no answer. It's not to be solved. It is to be managed.
Welcome to What I Love About Sex, where some incredible guests and I, Steph Kanowski, will be bringing you the tools for improving your sex life with topics such as sex issues with your partner, sexual self-confidence, premature ejaculation, sexual shame, masturbation, sharing your fetishes, orgasmic pleasure, and more. Sex is still so taboo, and I personally believe that by improving our understanding and communication skills around sex, we can enhance our own self-pleasure as well as deepening our long-term romantic relationships. So listen in, try to stay open-minded, and let's get started.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode on What I Love About Sex. Today we're talking about conflict. Because conflict is all around us all the time, and it's never going to go away. And it's probably the main indicator of whether or not a relationship stays together or falls apart. You know, conflict, not conflict itself, but how the conflict is managed. And something that's really interesting that John Gottman, who studies marriages and the success rate of marriages over a long period of time, like he'll follow the same couples for years and years to see if they stayed together and if they didn't and why or why not. And he has a track record for knowing what couples will end up getting divorced based on how they manage conflict in his office within 3 minutes, which is pretty cool, but he knows what to look for. And what he looks for is, you know, are these partners turning towards each other? Are they trying to understand each other? Are they being gentle with each other? Are they paying attention to each other, not shutting each other out, actually listening? Are they trying to bring some humor and lightness into the conflict they're discussing? Are they treating the conflict as though they're handling it together on the same team versus as separate entities? So these are just a few things he looks for and sees right away in these couples who sit in his office. And he has like a 95 to 97% success rate of knowing if those couples are going to end up getting divorced like 40 years later, 20, 10, 20, 30, 40 years later. So what he also says in studying conflict is that most conflict is not solvable. Actually, 70%. Based on his studies, 70% of conflict has no solution. There's no answer. It's not to be solved. It is to be managed. So this means when it comes to conflict, conflict itself is not a bad thing. It's actually good to have conversations about conflict because it shows that you are both maintaining a certain level of independence. You are both being true to what you want and making sure you're confronting your partner with that. If there's an issue around it, if there's a need that's not getting met, like these are things that are really important to communicate. Something that really helps in managing conflict is you can redo what you've said in a conflict or disagreement if it came across the wrong way. So for instance, if you're like, you know what? Well, maybe if you did this, you cut your partner off and say, maybe if you did this more, we wouldn't have this problem. And then you go, okay, wait, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. That came in the wrong moment. I'm just frustrated right now, but continue what you're saying. I'm sorry. See how that right away you take ownership, you backtrack, you say, oops, made a mistake. I'm in the heat of the moment. This is hard to talk about. I'm sorry I cut you off. Go ahead. Keep talking. In a way, you kind of rewinded and you made it better. You admitted, hey, I made a mistake right now, but let me address the fact I made a mistake and cut you off and blamed you. And I'm just frustrated. That's why I did that, but I don't want to do that. So let's start over. You're giving your partner the opportunity to understand that you have the best intentions for listening, for not coming across as blaming, and when you could take ownership like that, it comes with a sense of vulnerability. And another example of this would be, say you had an argument in the kitchen over something and you really blew it out of proportion and you raised your voice and you said something mean to your partner, then you felt bad and you were like, wow, I really blew up on her. But, you know, maybe I'll just take her out to dinner tonight. No, that's not the best way to handle it. And this is how a lot of people do handle it. Men and women will feel bad and then will do something random that's like a loving gesture to make up for the thing without addressing the thing. If you just take her out to dinner thinking that will make things better, that is not good management of conflict. If you are to go back and say, hey, I realized I really blew up at you before. I raised my voice and that's not the type of partner I want to be. And I just want you to know I'm sorry for doing that. I still stand by my beliefs around what I said and what I want, but I should not have delivered it in that tone. You don't deserve that and I don't want to be that type of partner. This is a way where once again, you're taking ownership and you're going back. Like just because the moment happened doesn't mean you can't. It's like, oh, well, like that already happened. I can't do anything about it. Yes, you can. Not only does this help you take ownership and feel good, because you will feel good when you admit this, especially when you say, I still stand by my beliefs around the issue, but I don't want to be that type of man. That's going to make you feel good because that shows you're staying in integrity with your character and the man you want to be. So not only is this good for your relationship, but this is good for you as a man, for your self-confidence, for you holding true to who you really want to be and how you want your partner to view you in this relationship. So it's great for everyone to go back and fix what you broke that you know you broke. You know, if we're aware that something hit our partner the wrong way, why wouldn't we tell them? You know, wouldn't you want your partner to know that you have the best intentions? Don't you want your partner to know you love them? And that even though you get frustrated with them and maybe even hate them sometimes, like you, at the end of the day, you love them and you want your team to win and you want to continue working on things together. But that gets lost in translation when your frustrations and your emotions get ahead of you. And sometimes you say things and you blurt things out that shouldn't be said, or they just come out the wrong way and you wanted them to come out the right way. And then you just like word vomit and it's like, oh my God, that wasn't good. Fix it. Like, it's okay to say, whoa, okay, I just word vomited. That wasn't cool. I mean, that's something I use. So that's what I'm saying. Most of you guys are not going to use word vomit. But I'll say that because I sometimes, personally, I will hold things in until I can't take it anymore at times. And when Andrew finally asks me, is there something on your mind or something like that, I will be like, blah, 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 blah. I'll just like let it all out. And I call it word vomiting. And I realize I do that. So later on, I've said to him, this happened like twice. I said to him, hey, I realized I really word vomited on you before. And it's just because I was holding so much in that I didn't process in an organized way. And you kind of caught me off guard asking me how I was. And it just came, like everything came out. So what's important and what I wanted to say most and in simplest form is that blah, blah, blah. Right? And then I'll go back to that conversation. There was even a hard conversation we had last night where I cut Andrew off and I said something that kind of put the attention on him when he was calling something out about me. And then I right away said, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have brought that up. That's not helpful. Can you continue? Like right in that moment, like I cut him off and then I was like, oh, okay, never mind. I shouldn't have said that. That's not helpful. Can you continue? And that doesn't make him feel great, right? Because I just blurted something out and cut him off. So he still might be annoyed. But at the same time, he's going to appreciate me being like, my bad. That isn't helping us right now. Can you keep talking? Because I want to listen, you know? So this can come in so many forms. Even if you said something a month ago to your partner, okay, even if it was early on in the day, like there's been times where I've said something to Andrew, like in the morning, and then I thought all day, like, oh my God, I hope he didn't take it this way because I definitely didn't didn't want it to come across this way, but I could totally see how he would, how he could take it that way. Oh man, I hope he didn't. And I'll ruminate on it. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to make sure that he knows how I wanted it to come across. And maybe later that night after work, I'll say to him, hey, babe, remember earlier, like in the morning when I said this, when I made this comment to you, I feel like it could have came across like this, but I really wanted it to come across like this. So I just want you to know that. And I'm pretty sure every time I've said this to him, he was like, oh, I didn't even think that. Like, no, I didn't even think you had, like, you meant it to come across in, like, you know, that bad way. And I was like, okay, I just want to be sure. And that gives him, and he always appreciates that because he's like, I appreciate you, like, you know, clarifying. Because it shows I care about hurting him in some way, or I care about coming across like a bitch. Like, I don't want to do that. That's not my ideal character as his partner. So for me to clarify, it not only makes me feel good because now I know I'm owning up to the fact that, like, hey, this could have come across really rude or mean, and I had no intention of it coming across that way. Like, that helps me clarify my own actions, and it helps me understand how my partner perceived it and how they feel about how they perceived it. So it's like we get back on the same, we're on the same page, and I'm not in my head around like, oh man, I hope he didn't take it that way. So that's something else. And like I said, it could even be a month, like something you did last month where it's like, babe, this has been on my mind. And, you know, it's so weird. It's a month ago, but I just want to clarify something because I said something to you, or maybe even you did this thing and it really rubbed me the wrong way. And I've been thinking about it and it's really kind of getting to me. And I'm wondering why you did that. Or I'm wondering if you had like ill intentions around that, or why do you think you did it like that? You know, just like a curiosity or calling something out if there's something gnawing at you. Like, don't let something gnaw at you. Most men do, because 80%, also according to Gottman statistics, 80% of conflicts are brought up by women. Women are able to handle conflict better because we were more able to keep calm in moments of handling tension, where men are hormonally charged pretty quickly. And because of that, anger rises right away. And it's a lot of men, that's why a lot of men shut down, because they either don't want to come across like a dick, right? Like, you guys will be in your head like, all right, well, don't say this, we'll make it worse. Don't do this. Just keep your mouth shut. Just like, you know, and you're more likely to avoid or stay quiet because you don't want to hurt her with your anger, or you're just having a hard time processing all the emotions that you don't even know what to say. And if you do say something, you lash out. So this is why most conflict is not brought up by men. Even though something may bother you, you tend to hold it in. But something I encourage you to do is, even if you have to hold it in that moment, because this is something that Andrew does and it kind of frustrates me, but I understand why he does it based on what I just said. In a moment of bringing something up and having a conversation about it, he'll be more the quiet one. I am the one leading the conflict conversations for the most part. And sometimes I'm like annoyed that I'm leading the whole thing and I'm the one staying really calm and asking questions, and I'm trying to get more out of him. And it's not like he's not present with me. He's there. He just has very little to say. And when I ask, do you have something else to say, or what's on your mind that you want to share, you know, and he'll tell me something like, there's just a lot in my head right now, and I'm angry with you, frustrated, and I don't want things to come across the wrong way. So I need some time, but I love you. And that's a way for me to be like, okay, it's frustrating that he's not sharing in that moment, but I also understand why he's not, because he just told me. That's fine, right? Like, that's allowing us to manage conflict in a way that we know best, because that's how he processes frustration. And the way I process it is I say as I feel. Like, in that moment, I will like say things, and sometimes I think it comes across as a lot, because I'm like using examples and I'm telling him, you know, so as the leader of the conversation, I think I'm just, I feel the need to talk more, and then I might share a lot more because he's more quiet. So that's how it is. That's how it is for us. That's how it is for most men and women. The woman is more so sharing when she's given the chance to, and when she feels safe enough to, and the man is typically more so staying on the quiet side. I want to clarify first that quiet does not mean shutting down. Quiet does not mean avoiding the conversation. You can be on the quiet side and listen and do your best to make little remarks or ask questions to get a better understanding of what's happening, no matter how uncomfortable you are. Like, really try to just say, okay, I hear you. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Or that doesn't make sense to me, but I have to think on that more. It's good to make little comments like that so that your partner knows you're actually in the conversation and you're not avoiding it or turning away from it, turning away from her, right? That's how it feels when you're in a conflict situation. If you don't say anything and you're not making eye contact and your body's turned away, you know, you're not connected in any way, it's going to make your partner feel like you're just ignoring her or avoiding the hardship. And that's not good. Okay. You can hold off on sharing your personal thoughts about it, your personal feelings about it, your examples you have in your head. You can hold all that off while still engaging in the moment. And even it, letting her know, honestly, like, hey, I have a lot going on in my head right now, but I just want you to know I'm listening to you and I'm hearing what you're saying. That goes a long way, a long way. And I think we both underestimate, I mean, men and women underestimate how far comments like that go. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with telling your partner, like, I just have to think on this and I'll get back to you tomorrow about it. All right. That's another thing. Make sure you share when you could talk about it, because this is something I heard recently that a woman's partner, he'll say, I don't know to her questions when it comes to conflict. And she's like, well, when do you think you will know? Or when will you think about it? And he's like, I don't know, when I have time. And she's like, well, what does that mean? Like, when will you have time? And he's like, I don't know. I'm like, I've been really busy. Just, I don't know. That's not fair to your partner. And that's you avoiding the conflict. So instead of saying, I don't know, tell your partner, this is a lot to process, but I definitely want to talk to you about it. Give me 3 days max. And within those 3 days, I'm going to pick the best time where I feel I can talk to you about this. Okay. But I promise you within 3 days, we will talk about it. So that gives you some leeway. And it also lets your partner know that, hey, I prioritize this. This is important. I get that. But I need time to process it in a way that's best for me and for our relationship so that I don't say the wrong things or come across the wrong way. So this is an example of meeting in the middle when it comes to managing conflict. You know, your partner wants to talk now. You do not feel it's wise to talk now because you have some processing to do and you want to give yourself some time because of your work schedule. So you give a specific date or, you know, a max date where you'll have this conversation to show that, hey, I know this is still important, but I have to also respect my boundaries and make sure it can happen within, you know, this time frame. And make sure you stand by it, by the way. If you say 3 days max and you don't talk to your partner, you are losing trust in your relationship. Every second that goes beyond those 3 days, that 3 day promise, is another piece of trust lost. So really stand by your word. Be a man who stands by his word. Be a man your partner can rely on, because that's what's going to get you guys through managing all the conflict that will come your way. Because if it hasn't already, it will come. It's natural. It's human instinct. And just because you have a lot of conflict does not mean your relationship is not healthy or thriving. Okay. You can have talking about, you know, conflict itself is good. It is not bad. You just got to make sure that you're managing it properly and you're continuously managing it together, not separately, feeling like you're attacking each other. Okay. All right. So I hope that was helpful. So on a more personal note, if you guys are curious about my life and what's been going on, I am getting another surgery next week. And yeah, it's a fat transfer surgery. So I'm curious to see what happens. I think I shared this in a previous episode, but I've had little breast tissue come out of my surgery. Okay, that was a weird way to say it. I don't have basically any breast tissue because what happened was I went into surgery at 23 with an A cup. So I already had little boobies, and I get implants. And when those implants had to come out from me being really sick over the last year and a half, they had to take even more breast tissue out than I originally had, because to make sure that I was protected from this sickness and that every single part came out, right? Because your body forms what's called a capsule around the implant to protect it to protect the foreign object from invading your body. So this capsule is like this hard, well, not hard. It's actually not hard. Well, some of them are hard. Mine wasn't. It's kind of like this tissue created to protect, but it's different. So it has to be removed. And once that's all removed, it pulls out, you know, more breast tissue with it being removed. So basically came out of the surgery last summer pretty flat chested. And it's been a whirlwind of emotions, because, you know, how do you go from one day looking at yourself with these big, beautiful tits, and then the next day you feel, it was like 2 days after surgery where they changed my bandages, and I just remember running my hand up my chest and not like just immediately feeling my nipple. And I was like, what the fuck? And I immediately started hysterically crying with the nurse, and she was hugging me. And it was just a moment of, who am I now? What does this mean? What is this going to do? Can I ever have boobs again? Like, oh my God. Just an extreme loss. And it's been challenging in so many ways. I keep saying I'll do a podcast on this when I'm ready, because it's just still so, it's just a lot. But I think I'm feeling more hopeful going into this fat transfer surgery, hoping that I could see at least a little bit of results with this doctor, who's apparently amazing. I mean, his work looks incredible. And he has hope for me. He actually specializes in women who are low BMI, so they have little fat, and are post-explant patients. So I'm a prime candidate for him, even though he says most doctors wouldn't touch me because, you know, I hardly have any fat. It's not likely for my body to retain a lot of fat up there. So he trusts that, you know, he's good at what he does, and he's gonna get me some results. So it's exciting. It's also extremely nerve-wracking because I just feel like I'm putting so much pressure on it. And yeah, it's just, man, it's just, I don't even know. There is so much to say about this experience that, let's just say there have been a lot of tears. There's been a lot of hard conversations with me and Andrew. There's been a lot of challenges, a lot of insecurity that, you know, has been stirred up within me that I haven't felt in years. And that's been like, it's a lot. And I've questioned, you know, like, will I ever be sexy again? You know, will I ever feel the way I used to feel and see myself the way I used to see myself? And it's definitely easy to be like, oh, like, you're still beautiful, and like, tell yourself you're still beautiful. But like, dude, when society puts a certain message in front of your face in terms of what makes you an attractive woman, and you're completely missing that thing, and you used to have it and you used to feel it, and you remember how vibrant it made you feel and how sexy it made you feel, and now it's gone. It's like, and then there's so many feelings of like, okay, well, me doing that made my body, like I made myself sick, right? So there was like, there were times of guilt, and then there was anger, and there was loss, and there was frustration, and there's insecurity and anxiety in my relationship because what if he leaves me? Like, things are not easy and they should be easier than this, you know? Like, we're early on in our relationship. So just a lot of overthinking, a lot of self-identity questions, and trying to figure out like just how I can feel secure. And like I said, I think the surgery is going to be helpful, but it's also, you know, it's also a risk. So it's a financial risk. It's a health risk. It's a risk of, you know, I'm doing lipo on my legs. That's where they're taking the fat from. So I might have, you know, something may happen with the legs doing the lipo, you know, my legs will look different. So it's a matter of like, am I going to trade one insecurity for another? You know, like there's just so many things going into this whole story. And yeah, I want to frame it in a way that strengthens and spreads a message about women. And I'm just like waiting to be ready to share this perfect story with a lesson and everything. But now I just still feel so broken and just frustrated and sad about this. So it's hard to do that right now, but I definitely will, because I think I've gone through so much in the past year and a half, guys. Like, I don't think anyone will ever understand. And I've been trying so hard to like be strong, and you know, that's why I'm really saving myself for my clients and not putting out a ton of content, because most days it's just hard. And like, it's really, especially being a sexologist and having to talk about sex and attraction and like desire and feeling like I am not desirable. Like, it's really fucking with my head. So it's really like, on good days, I really have to make the most of them right now. Because this whole thing is just a lot, you know, plus all the symptoms I'm still dealing with. So it's been a crazy journey. I've learned a lot. And I saw something the other day that made me feel good. It was kind of like the biggest wins of your life will be the things you overcome without people even knowing about it. And I think that's what this will be. This is going to be the biggest win of my life, getting through all of this and coming out on the other end a happy, peaceful, confident, sexy woman that I know I am deep down. And I don't feel like I've won yet, but I do feel like I'm still in the race. And there are days I run faster than others, but I never stopped moving. And I'm proud of myself for that. But I'm also like, where the fuck is the finish line? I have no fucking idea. I thought it was going to be back there. And there's all these false lines, finish lines. But I guess we will see. And just gotta, you know, Andrew says take it one day at a time. And that's, you know, in one way, that's great advice. In other ways, I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I don't know. I'm just trying my best. Let's put it that way. I'm trying my absolute best. So I just wanted to give you an update on where I am with that. And I often get a lot of questions like, how are you feeling? What's been going on with the explant? Maybe I'll share something on Instagram stories soon. I was thinking of taking you on my fat transfer journey and kind of logging that on Instagram stories next week, but we'll see. We'll see where my head's at, where I am emotionally. Anyway, that's an update for you. Hope this podcast was helpful, at least the first half. And that is it. Have an amazing morning, evening, or night, wherever you are in the world. And I'll talk to you soon.
I hope this episode helped you. If it did, I would love for you to leave me an iTunes review. It would mean the world to me. You can also screenshot your favorite episodes and tag me on Instagram at Steph Ganowski. And before I go, remember, your sex life is as good as you make it out to be. Until next time.